The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning. It's good to see you all. I know some of you have traveled quite a ways to be here, and others are from right here in town. So thank you for making the effort to show up today and to join our Ongo practice. Quite a few familiar faces in the group, but I see some people who I don't know. And so just to explain, we are in the middle of a intensive practice period called Ongo. And each intensive practice period, or most of them anyway, are led by a head student, in this case, Gesho or Shuso. And it's customary when there is a head student to lead the Ongo, for the head student to choose a study text or for Roshi to choose one. And Gesho chose the poet Ryokan, an 18th century Japanese poet. And so I thought I would start off with a very short poem by Ryokan. He wrote, "People make elaborate offerings to the Buddha. In my hut, I dedicate a painted rice cake." Now, that poem is going to be a little puzzling to you if you aren't familiar with Zen literature. The painted rice cake that he's probably referring to, that he's dedicating to the Buddha, is most likely one of his, either his poems, or he was a great calligrapher. He wrote beautiful kanji on paper. Great poet, great calligrapher. And in Zen parlance, this is called a painted rice cake, because in Zen we hear over and over that our words and thoughts about reality are not reality itself. In other words, thinking about getting hit on the head is not at all the same experience as getting hit on the head. And so thinking, you know, the phrase, thinking about getting hit on the head, that's the painted rice cake, the abstraction, and the actual experience is something quite different. That would be the rice cake. And so I thought it would might be helpful. Where does this phrase come from? Because, you know, we often hear it. We often, in Zen practice, hear this distinction made between direct experience and abstract thought. Well, the phrase a painted rice cake cannot satisfy hunger comes from the master Kyogen. Some of you might have been here for my MLK Day talk when I talked about Isan, who kicked over a pitcher. Well, Kyogen was a disciple of Isan. And he was a type of student who was also very familiar in Zen literature. He was mentally a genius. He memorized the sutras with no trouble, had a tremendous grasp of Zen literature and Buddhist literature in general, and he was just as confused as and unhappy as he was the day he first walked into Isan's monastery. And for those of you who have, you know, been following along over the years, you'll recognize this figure, this is almost a stock figure in Zen, the brilliant guy who can't rest. So there was, right at the beginning, there was Ananda, the cousin of the Buddha, who had a photographic memory and memorized all the Buddha's teachings. And he couldn't get it until one day, quite a few years after the Buddha's death, he asked his teacher, Mahakasyapa, "Is there anything the Buddha passed along to you besides the robe? You know, like, it seems like he got a little something extra here that I'm not getting." Mahakasyapa said, "Ananda." And he goes, "Yes, master." He says, "Knock down the flagpole." They knocked down the flagpole at the end of a Dharma talk in those days. So he's basically saying, "Ananda, the Dharma talk is over." And Ananda finally realized what he'd been looking for. And then there's the figure of Tokusan, who was during the Dung Dynasty, the leading Chinese expert on the Diamond Sutra. He wasn't quite satisfied either. And finally, an old woman by the side of the road asked him a question about the Diamond Sutra he couldn't answer. And he had great self-doubt and went to a nearby Zen master. And they talked about the Diamond Sutra long into the night. And then the master, Lungtan, said, "It's dark out. You better take a candle back with you to your quarters." And he held out the candle. And as Tokusan reached for it, they were in total darkness. And Tokusan realized what he hadn't been able to get intellectually. So all these are instances of the saying, "A painted rice cake can't satisfy hunger." And as an expedient teaching, this is very helpful, because we think, oh, well, you know, we come in thinking, well, if we just study enough and read enough and listen to enough Dharma talks, we can settle our questions. And so it helps to know at the get-go that, helpful as these things are, it's probably not going to set your doubts at rest if they're deep doubts. But hearing that can create another kind of confusion. And that confusion is that there is something in particular that you're supposed to realize that all your thoughts and intellect and painted rice cakes, they're all getting in the way of you seeing the real deal, the real thing. That comes up over and over again in Dokusan. Students come, and some students, especially those who have been practicing for a few years, have a hard time talking like people in Dokusan because they don't want to get too intellectual. So the notion is that intellectual chatter somehow takes you away from the real deal. So don't go there, you know, it's taking you away. And I'm sure all of us have the experience of believing that when we're sitting on our cushions doing zazen, every time a thought comes up, it's taking us away from the real deal. We have to let it go and come back to the real deal. And of course, what's getting in our way over and over again is thinking that there's a real deal, which the Buddha and the Diamond Sutra tells us very clearly, I have nothing in particular to teach. There is no particular teaching that can be called my Dharma. So this is not something that you move away from when you intellectualize and go into thought. And this is not something you move toward when you let the thought go and come back to stillness. And I think it was to address this confusion about thought and intellectualization. And, you know, the sutras, the teaching themselves that inspired Dogen Zenji to write an essay called A Painted Rice Cake. And what he had to say, it's sort of the opposite of the expedient teaching that we receive. A painted rice cake cannot satisfy hunger. What he says is there is no real rice cake. All rice cakes are painted rice cakes. All rice cakes are neither real nor unreal. So what does he mean by that? I thought some lines from his essay might be helpful. When he talks about painted rice cakes, he's not so much talking about a painting hung on a wall as he is about rice cakes are being actively painted in each moment. The rice cake ryotan is being painted right now. He's painting it and is being painted in this very moment. The rice cake shuso is being painted right now. And none of these rice cakes are the same. There's nothing in particular that can be called a real rice cake. They're being painted with the ingredients of painting. And he says, accordingly, the painted rice cake spoken of here means that sesame rice cakes, herb rice cakes, milk rice cakes, toasted rice cakes, millet rice cakes, and the like, and this is the key, are all actualized in the painting. They're all actualized in the painting, no matter what kind of rice cake you are at this moment, whether you're a happy rice cake, a sad rice cake, a sleepy rice cake. No matter what kind of rice cake you are at this moment, you are being actualized in this moment. You are bringing everything you have to this moment, whole body and mind. You can't help doing that. And you are being actualized by the whole universe at this moment. You can't help but be the air, the sounds coming through the window, the sky. So you are painting and you are being painted. And other than the actualization of a rice cake in this moment, whether it's an actualization as a thought about a rice cake, an actualization of a thought about the Dharma, whether it's an actualization of intellect or an actualization of pain in the legs, it's all being painted at this moment. And other than that actualization, there is no real rice cake. So, why is it that a painted rice cake cannot satisfy hunger? Well, happily, Dogen explains this very kindly for us. He says, the phrase does not satisfy hunger means this hunger, and not the ordinary matter of the 12 hours. He's talking about spiritual hunger, deep doubt. Means this hunger never encounters a painted rice cake. Even if you were to eat a painted rice cake, it would never put an end to this hunger. Why? Rice cakes are not separate from hunger. And what is hunger in the metaphor that Dogen Zenji is using here? He's talking about emptiness, the radical openness of being and non-being. The whole catastrophe, as Daido Roshi used to say. Emptiness meaning, as I said before, that there is no permanent place to land. It's all being created dependent on causes and conditions and changes moment by moment, according to causes and conditions. Not one of us is the same rice cake that we were when this thought, when this talk began. So a rice cake cannot satisfy hunger because we are not separate from hunger. We are not separate from emptiness. Of course, Dogen explains this much better than I do through a beautiful image. He says, hunger is a single staff maneuvered horizontally and vertically through 1,000 changes and myriad forms. It's hunger that allows us to actualize the rice cake that we are. It's emptiness. It's the moment by moment painting of ourselves and being painted by all that seems to be outside ourselves. And then he says, a rice cake is the wholeness of body and mind actualized. A rice cake is blue, yellow, red, and white, as well as long, short, square, and round. A rice cake is a Zen beginner. A rice cake is a Zen senior student. Rice cake is at peace or not at peace. None of them are the same. And all are actualized, whole body and mind, at this moment. So this kind of brings up a very natural question. So if all rice cakes are painted rice cakes, if all rice cakes actualize whole body and mind at this moment, each in their own way, then is it all good? I mean, you know, is there any difference between a beginner and someone who's practiced for 50 years? What's the point of all this work that we do if we're a rice cake actualized at this moment, whole body and mind, whether we just walked in the door or whether we've been practicing for a very long time? The Zen way of asking this question is, well, how do we distinguish dragons from snakes? How do we say, well, you passed the koan. No, you need to work on this koan a little bit more. How can we do such a thing? Well, Master Ango, in the Blue Cliff Record, brought up this question when he was commenting on a koan about a rice cake. And what he said, the way you distinguish is, if you have precepts, go by the precept. If you don't have precepts, go by the example. So, what does he mean by that? What is precept? What is example? What is this lens that allows us to look at our practice and actually have aspiration? Because, you know, if it's all good just as we are, what's the point of having aspiration? So Katagiri Roshi has a very nice way of thinking about precepts. And he cites a disciple of Dogen Zenji in the comment. And precepts refer in a large sense to maturity of insight. And what is that maturity? It's the maturity that Shakyamuni realized when he said, on the moment of seeing the morning star during his enlightenment experience, How wonderful. I and all beings are enlightened at this moment. In general, we think of ourselves as painting our lives and are not so conscious of all the many ways that we are painted. We're aware of all the thoughts that run through our head, and we think, oh, well, that's me, my opinion about this, my opinion about that. But, well, who is it who's growing your hair? Who is it who's making your heart beat? Who is it that's allowing you to hear the noise of the construction from around the corner? None of these are conscious processes under our control. So as soon as we look at these examples, we can see in a very real way how our life is not just something going on in our head, but how our life is lived at this moment with all beings and the entire universe. Katagiri Roshi says, in the big scale of life, precept is the activity of the whole universe, which naturally ripens a tree's life, a person's life, and the life of all sentient beings. This is the most important meaning of precept. You can use Buddha's precepts as a practical guide for how to take care of human life in the small scale. But first accept the precepts as the manifestation of the whole universe. Accept the precepts as the life of mountains, sky, and all sentient beings, and make them alive in your own life. So, one way of looking at where you are is, what is the degree to which your actualization is the actualization of all beings at this moment? And what degree is this some personal little prize that you're hoping to get for yourself and hang upon your wall and maybe bow down to once in a while? So, as a way of looking at actualization, is your actualization as the Buddha's was with all sentient beings? Are you awake to the universal life of this moment, which is not such a profound and distant thing? It's simply this life that's going on right now, completely ordinary and yet extending in the 10 directions throughout space and time. So if you have precepts, go by the precepts. Well, what about example? No, that's not so hard either. All of us come across, both in the Zen world and outside of our Zen Sangha, examples of people who we just think there's some, they just kind of get this, you know? I can't be exactly like this person or that person. I mean, I talked about ML, you know, Martin Luther King a week or so ago. I'm never going to be anywhere near that. But I can go by the example. I can go by someone whose actualization I admire and use that as a light that I can sort of point my nose toward. Yeah, you know, I would kind of like to be a little more like that. That seems like a good direction for a human being to move in. And, you know, we come across examples of this, of actualization in the Zen literature. Dogen famously talks of one where a master, Yen Kwan, is fanning himself on the porch, and a monk comes up to him and says, "Master, the nature of wind is eternal, and it reaches everywhere. Why are you bothering to fan yourself?" And the master says, "You only understand that the nature of wind is eternal. You don't understand it reaches everywhere." Monk asked, "What is the meaning of it reaches everywhere?" The master, "There's no place it comes to rest. There's no separation between the eternal principle and the ever-changing dharmas as they come and go. The function of the eternal principle is just this constant fanning, the constant cleaning, the constant taking care of our lives and the lives of others." I'd like to finish up with another short poem of Ryokan, which gets at this perfectly, also involves a fan. He says, "My hand is tired of fanning, but where should I set it? There is no inside or outside. There is no place it does not reach. There is no particular principle except the principle you are actualizing at this very moment." And throughout the rest of the day, we have the opportunity to keep fanning together and to take care of ourselves and the Dharma and to realize this great matter, just as the ordinary human beings we are.